Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We have late breaking news in the Ahmaud Arbery case out of Georgia. William Roddy Bryan, the man who took smartphone video of the killing of the unarmed black man back in February, has been arrested. The Georgia Bureau of Investigation said Bryan is charged with murder and criminal attempt to commit false imprisonment. Arbery was jogging through the neighborhood in the southeast Georgia town when he was accosted by Gregory and Travis McMichael and shot to death. Tonight, we take another look at this case and the Louisville, Kentucky killing of Breonna Taylor. Arbery and Taylor's family are represented by civil rights attorney Benjamin Crump. Earlier today, I spoke to him about the cases.
I just want to, first of all, thank you for talking to us. And I want to go right into the issues regarding the Arbery case. As you understand it, what is the status of the case today?
The status of Arbery's search for justice is now in the hands of District Attorney Joyette Holmes, who is the Cobb County District Attorney. She is an African-American female. She is a Republican, and she was appointed by the governor and the Attorney General to now handle the case. Also, the Department of Justice is considering whether to initiate a hate crime investigation into the killing of Ahmaud Arbery on February 23rd, 2020.
Mm-hmm. Is there going to be a hearing for the McMichaels on tomorrow regarding bond status?
We have not been, that has not been confirmed. That has been rumored. But the problem is, I think D.A. Holmes is trying to continue her investigation, and she may ask the judge to continue that bond hearing because they want to offer more evidence why they should not be given a bond.
Can you characterize for me what has happened with the judges and the prosecutors since this issue came to light? One of the things that is fascinating is that there have been five judges within the jurisdiction that have recused themselves from this case, for example. What does that say to you?
What it says to me is that there is a system in place that attempted to sweep the death of Ahmaud Arbery under the rug. When we look at that video and we witnessed that lynching in 2020 in broad daylight, and the fact that the police did not arrest them immediately, and the fact that the first district attorney, Jackie Johnson, said that they didn't see probable cause before she recused herself, and the fact that it is alleged from the city commissioners, one African-American and one white, saying that she instructed the police officers not to file charges against the McMichaels, is a problem. It violates her canon of ethics. And then the second district attorney from Liberty County, Georgia, Bond Hill, he said he had a conflict of interest, but then he went on to write a memorandum stating why the McMichaels should not be arrested based on lack of probable cause, even though he had the video and he had all the evidence right there before him. And so we believe that is inappropriate. And then the third district attorney who took over the case, Durden, and it was his opinion that he could not arrest the McMichaels, that they had to go before a grand jury, and it was going to be up to a grand jury whether they would be arrested or not. And so what I see this as is what I summarize in my book, Open Season, The Legalized Genocide of Colored People, as the intellectual justification of discrimination that happens over and over again to people of color, where we end up getting the most of injustice and the least of justice.
Mm-hmm. You've seen the video that was released earlier this week about the contact that Aubrey had way back in 2017 with the Glenn County Police. Does that, what impact do you believe that will have on this case, if any at all? Do you think that any kind of publicity may in any way, shape, or form taint the case? Because in that video that many people have seen, he was sitting in the park minding his business, and the officers approached him. One attempted to tase him when his arms were outstretched. He was compliant, even if he was a little irritated. Is that going to help or hurt the case?
I think it's completely irrelevant. I think this video was leaked by the Glenn County Sheriff's Department as an attempt to assassinate the character of Ahmaud Arbery, and I think it has nothing to do with what happened 2 years later on February 23rd, 2020. And I do believe that this matter should be moved away from Glenn County. I think it should be moved to a venue that people are not partial to the people who they are familiar with and who they know within the law enforcement community there in Southeast Georgia. And so that video should be irrelevant, but if it stays in Glenn County, we fear that they may try to use it as assassination, to kill the assassination of Ahmaud Arbery, which is so not only unfair, but it is an injustice to allow that to happen. And we have to continue to use our voices to say Ahmaud Arbery, even in that video, did absolutely nothing wrong but proclaim his constitutional rights to not have them search his car. And also, Ahmaud Arbery exhibited what African-Americans often exhibit when we become frustrated because law enforcement continue to profile us and harass us every day of our lives.
The similarities on the face of this case to the Trayvon Martin situation in Sanford, Florida, are not lost on a great many people. Are you concerned that as we move through this process, that the outcome could be the same?
Well, there's always concern when it's a person of color killed by a white person in America that they won't get equal justice under the law. But I am cautiously optimistic for several reasons. First of all, we have video in the Ahmaud Arbery case. In Trayvon, we did not have video, and so that's a huge distinction. And the similarities are very similar between Trayvon and Ahmaud. But also, we have an African-American district attorney who I want to believe understands the life experiences and how we see our children and should be able to articulate that better than the prosecutors did in the Trayvon Martin case. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, I look at the cases that I have been involved in recently, the last three high-profile cases, whether it was Corey Jones down in Palm Beach, Florida, the church drummer who was broke down on the side of the road, and an undercover plainclothes officer pulls up on him in a cargo van and never identifies himself and kills Corey Jones. You remember that was the case that was featured in the Super Bowl ad.
Yes, sir.
NFL. And that jury, because it was a tape recording from the tow truck company, an all-white jury convicted that police officer. He was sentenced to 25 years. And then, secondly, in the case of Marquise McLaughlin in St. Petersburg, Florida, he was in the at a convenience store, and this wannabe cop, another white man who feels he had his right to impose his will on black people, killed him in front of his children over an alleged parking in a handicapped spot. And an all-white jury in Pinellas County saw that video and rejected his stand your ground, offense and sentenced him to 20 years in prison. And then we all know about Amber Geiger, the white policewoman who went in Botham Jean's apartment, allegedly the wrong apartment, and killed him. And she tried to say self-defense and castle theory. Well, the jury rejected her defense, and she was convicted of first-degree murder, the first time a white woman had ever been convicted of first-degree murder of a white policewoman in the killing of a black person. And she was sentenced to 10 years. And even though the punishment did not fit the crime in that case, she was sentenced. So I am cautiously optimistic on the precedence of these last three cases that I've had in the last 16 months that there will be a conviction of the killers of Ahmaud Arbery.
Let me ask you about this other case, since you were, you know, obviously talking about the Texas case, the Breonna Taylor case in Louisville, not getting as much attention as the Ahmaud Arbery case, involved Louisville police officers, questions about no-knock warrants, and her boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, who fired shots, wounded a police officer. He is still locked up. Can you talk to me briefly about that case and your thoughts about where it's going to go?
Certainly. I have a unique perspective as an attorney for the family of Ahmaud Arbery and as an attorney for the family of Breonna Taylor. The fact that this sister was executed in the sanctity of her home by a bot execution of a dangerous, unconstitutional no-knock warrant. And her boyfriend, who was just defending his castle, defending his woman and their lives, thought it was intruder shot, one shot. And he was then confronted and captured by the police. And when he said self-defense, it didn't work for him. He was arrested, put in jail, charged with attempted murder, and now is facing life in prison. And I will say, it begs the question, does African Americans have a right to the Second Amendment? And I wholeheartedly continue to say, if you ran with Maud in the Ahmaud Arbery case, then you need to stand with Bree, because Breonna Taylor life mattered, because black women lives matter too. And everybody should be calling, everybody at Howard University, every sister, every brother should be calling the mayor of Louisville, Kentucky, and declaring that they need to fire these police officers and they need to arrest them.
Was this the wrong place? Was this the wrong apartment? From what you understand, I know the evidence is still coming out, but were they at the wrong place, from what you understand?
They violated all their policies and procedures, Harold. They already had the subject of the search warrant in their custody, and they put forth false information on the affidavit to get the judge to sign this dangerous no-knock warrant to be executed on Breonna Taylor's apartment. And so it was the wrong apartment in the fact that it was false information being provided to even get the probable cause to do this on Breonna's apartment. I mean, she had never committed a crime in her life. She had never even been arrested. She was an EMT who lived to help people. And it's just outrageous. As to quote one of the city council women in Louisville, Kentucky, it's a damn shame. I agree with Senator Rand Paul and Senator Kamala Harris, who both have said in the aftermath of the killing of Breonna Taylor, these no-knock warrants should be abolished, because it is foreseeable that people are going to be killed in these dangerous no-knock warrant executions, and the fact that they are disproportionately executed against African Americans.
That was noted civil rights attorney Benjamin Crump, also representing the families of Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor in the killings of both of those individuals. Tonight, we are talking about the search for justice in both of those cases, another Black Lives Matter issue sitting before us tonight. We are going to be talking to a Howard University faculty member with the Afro-American Studies Department. We're going to be having a chance to talk to Dr. Valethia Watkins in just a bit. But we want to let you know that lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We want to know what you think about this issue, the Ahmaud Arbery story and the Breonna Taylor story. Black Lives Matter, once again, something for us to consider. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. The original Quiet Storm is next on WHUR. Your comments and questions at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. We'll be back in a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we are talking about the search for justice in the killing of two black people here in America, Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor. We just heard from noted civil rights attorney and representative for both families. Now we want to talk about the issue at hand. My guest is Dr. Valethia Watkins. She's a faculty member with Howard University's Afro-American Studies Department. If you have a comment, if you have a question about this, lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Watkins, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting me to join you today.
Absolutely. Let me first get your reaction to the arrest of William Bryan, the man who took the smartphone video of the Ahmaud Arbery killing. He has said all along that he was taking the video so that authorities could have proof of what happened. He is charged with murder and criminal attempt to commit false imprisonment. Your reaction?
This is a very welcome development. I think many people questioned his version of why he was there, how he came to be there, what his connection was to the McMichaels. How did he even become aware to be taking video? And so based on other media reports, people really questioned his version of the truth, especially in light of the fact that it seems as if he had participated in the pursuit and he had participated in blocking Ahmaud from getting away from the McMichaels. So people really questioned that he had a much more deeper role than just an innocent bystander.
One of the other things that happened earlier this week on Tuesday, the McMichaels' home was searched by the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. Keeping in mind that the actual killing of Ahmaud Arbery happened in February, so we are now talking about more than 2 months since his death, and now authorities are searching the McMichaels home. What might they expect to find 2.5 months after this killing?
And that is the real cause of concern about the delay. And that concern is the fact that they had 2 months to tamper with evidence, get rid of evidence, particularly because of their close ties with law enforcement, particularly Gregory McMichael's investigative job working with the prosecutorial office or being a prosecutorial investigator. He has much more insight about how these types of cases and evidence are developed and how what police and law enforcement are looking for. So their ability to tamper with evidence, they were given a large window of opportunity to not only align their stories, but to tamper with evidence. But I still think that was an important development and that there is more evidence out there that can be brought to bear to bring justice in this case.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. 7810. We are talking about a search for justice in the Ahmaud Arbery case in Georgia and the Breonna Taylor case in Louisville, Kentucky. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call, 202-319-7810. Let's go to Lisa calling from D.C. Lisa, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Can you hear me?
Go right ahead.
All right, thank you. I was calling because after all of this happens, and then they go back and they search through all these records, and they find this video where the cops, you know, were harassing him while he was in the park. And to me, I mean, they're trying to rebrand him as a thug or something to make it look like this victim of, oh, he's a thug. And it actually should backfire on them. And it's something that the police do to rebrand the victim and make it look like they're bad. But it really looks like, in my opinion, it looks like everybody's opinion, this is the systematic kind of harassment that they put on black men, especially on the regular basis. But look, they had to go back 3 years to find a video of him with the police. Mm-hmm. And it was just crazy. And they go out of their way to make the victim look like he's a bad guy. And he didn't look like a bad guy at all.
Dr. Watkins, thank you so much, Lisa, for your comment. Dr. Watkins, your thoughts about what Lisa is saying, and I'm assuming that you've seen that video from 2017?
Yes, absolutely. And she makes an excellent point. We've seen it time and time again that it is the fallback strategy of the police, and that is to blame the victim and to try to present this person in a bad light, to say they're not an angel, so they deserve this. Even if they are an angel like Breonna, who didn't have any criminal record, whether you have a record or not, that has no bearing on whether you should have been executed in cold blood. And I think part of the structural change we should begin to look into is perhaps in some cases like this, that we begin to try to invoke the same kind of, make an analogy, like in the case of rape, where you have the rape shield law. So you cannot put the rape victim on trial. You have to bring in relevant information, not go into their sexual history. And perhaps we need to look at structural changes that in cases like this, where the person's history is not relevant, that we should be able to have some kind of shield laws that don't put the victim on trial.
But, you know, but here's the thing, and let's talk a little bit about the video, because Attorney Benjamin Crump said during my interview with him, he said it was leaked from the Glenn County Police Department in an attempt at character assassination. Let's be really honest, whoever leaked the video probably really wasn't too bright, or either that or they just didn't see it before mm-hmm. they leaked it, because other than mild irritation and some expletives, Ahmaud Arbery he complied. And one of the first things he said was, I've been working, and I'm paraphrasing here, I've been working, 6 days. This is my only day off. I'm here in the park minding my business. They looked him over. He had no drugs, which is what they were suspecting. They had no right without his permission to search his car, and he exercised his constitutional right to do that. But I think the other thing is that when they attempted to tase him and the taser malfunctioned, his arms were outstretched.
Absolutely.
And so if anything, this does more to show him as a harmless individual as opposed to besmirching his character.
Well, they're just trying to show, oh, well, he's had an encounter with the police. But like you're saying, what he expressed is one righteous indignation, because taken out of context, you see that, or they may see it as an isolated incident. But if you're a young Black man and you have been routinely stopped, so if this is the 50th time they have, you know, harassed you on the street when you're not doing anything wrong, then of course you're going to be indignant with being harassed over and over and over again. And so, yes, they just want to show him as someone who was stopped by the police. But like you said, he was very articulate about his rights. You do not have a right to just search my vehicle. You have no probable cause. And the fact that he can articulate that and can be righteous in his discontent with being harassed when he only had a day off. Now, just suppose that against the unrighteous anger that you see with the protesters out against the stay-at-home orders who want to open up, and how they're all up in law enforcement face from Michigan. And I watched those protests, disrespecting law enforcement, disrespecting the state house, disrespecting the governor. And yet, how is that used and viewed? That's American citizens articulating their constitutional rights. So that double standard is just rank.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Kevin, calling from Detroit, Michigan. Kevin, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I had a question. What is a no-knock warrant? I heard Attorney Crump talk about a no-knock warrant. I've never heard that before.
That's an excellent question, and he was referring to the incident in Louisville, Kentucky on the early morning of March 13th, when Breonna Taylor was shot to death by Louisville, Kentucky police. Her boyfriend was in the house, and he fired a shot, wounding a police officer. And so far, the police are saying that they used a no-knock warrant. Go right ahead, Dr. Watkins, and give us the Cliff Notes version of what that is.
So for my understanding of it is that when they're not required to announce themselves, so they're not knocking on the door and saying, police, open up, they are basically entering with extreme force. It tend to be done in the middle of the night when people are usually asleep and not aware, and they're just entering. Part of the conflict with Breonna and what happened to her and Kenneth Walker is that they thought this was a home invasion. And they thought they were in extreme danger, which they were, and they called 911 because they had no consciousness that this was a law enforcement entering. They thought it was something else. And so no knock is supposed to be done in limited circumstances, as if you're, you know, dealing with extreme drug pens or something like that, where there's the ideal that if they announce themselves, the evidence would be flushed or destroyed. And so the notion is that they have to not announce themselves or else they may miss out on evidence. But in this case, as Attorney Crump suggested, that this was not the appropriate situation to use a no-knock warrant.
And one of the things that, you know, that has come out over the past 24 to 48 hours is that police are now saying that they did identify themselves ahead of that. Kenneth Walker, the boyfriend, says they did not. And I think all of this kind of flies in the face of, if you have a no-knock warrant, you are not required to identify yourself. So why did you identify yourself if you didn't have to identify yourself with the, you know, so you've got this,
absolutely,
you know, this kind of circle of quote-unquote evidence that is coming out. And so for Kevin, I hope that we've been able to clarify this, because the Louisville City Council just this week has discussed banning no-knock warrants as a result of the Breonna Taylor killing. So Kevin, thank you so much, you know, for that. Beyond that, one of the other things that Louisville City Council members, a handful of them, full of them, have said is that Breonna Taylor's boyfriend does not belong in jail because of, you know, self-defense and you know castle laws, you know, and the like. Your thoughts about that, because he is still locked up right now.
Well, this just adds insult to injury. He has just lost his significant other. He had faced danger, death himself. And so we could talk about the trauma that he has been subjected to and the injustice that he had to witness. The fact that they have charged him and they are the ones that killed this innocent person is very problematic. It flies in the face of what people are saying is the fact that there is a collision course, that this is foreseeable. That's what Attorney Crump said, that you have stand your ground, Second Amendment rights, the Castle Doctrine, and no knock. When you don't know who's entering your house, your natural defense is to defend your life and defend those around you. And so this is a recipe for the kind of thing that we just saw. I think the point is that when they say, for example, that they announced themselves, that is a point of extreme contention because there are like neighbors who basically said they did not hear that the announcement of police. And secondly, they came in plain clothes. So one of the things we should demand and we should hear is we should demand that they release those 911 tapes because Brianna and her mate called the police. They called 911. And so what would those tapes reveal about what happened that night?
I do want to talk to you about more some of the issues more broadly as it relates to both of these cases. Why are we only now hearing about the Breonna Taylor case? And when I say we, I'm talking about the national media activist outside of Louisville, outside of Kentucky, for example, because this happened on March 13th. This was only beginning to bubble up over the past 2 weeks. This is now May. Why do you think it's taken so long?
I think two critical points may be at play. And I think first, the only reason we started hearing about the other case or that it gained traction with Ahmaud is the leaked video. The police had the video all along, but you didn't get national outrage and public pressure until we saw the video, the public saw the video. And I think the lack of video, the video is a pivotal piece of evidence because they put out their story and a lot of misinformation. And what happens with video evidence, it doesn't align up with the propaganda or the disinformation they put out. And that's when people are more clear about what is taking place. And I think once also they release photos of the bullet-riddled home, that facilitated more outrage. Because if you go look at how they shot video and the size of the bullet holes, it is a miracle that he survived. Because they are using weapons of war with the size of the bullets that they are using. So I think we should not be required to have video evidence. But video evidence has been the linchpin for the majority of the cases that have come to national attention that challenge the official disinformation that the police tend to put out about these stories at first. And then I think the second point is that the fact that we have to deal with this continuation of a pandemic of violence against Black people perpetrated by the police and now vigilantes in the context of a larger pandemic, which at the time of March, you may step back and realize that was at the height of COVID-19. We're not even through with that pandemic, and almost all the oxygen in terms of the national media was completely focused on that. And it was only when people were able to, the family filed a wrongful lawsuit that begin to demand that the police have to release more information because they have not fully shared with the family what happened. Structurally, this system is very wrong.
and we need more independent insight in what's taking place, because they cannot police themselves or investigate themselves.
You know, the other issue, I mean, let's just be really honest here. For Black people in America, and we, you know, before this, all of the news has been how the pandemic is disproportionately impacting Black people. And the Black Lives Matter issue has not been discussed as loudly as it has in years past. And now here we go again. Is this another reason for Black people to be concerned? Is this stirring up a legitimate sense of paranoia? Attorney Crump mentioned Botham John in Dallas, where, you know, you can get killed when you're watching television while black, when you are jogging while Black in Brunswick, Georgia, when you are sleeping while Black in your own apartment in Louisville, Kentucky. That has got to really give a lot of Black people pause, not only when they leave their house, but while they're in their house.
This has been our story since we were brought here in the haze of violence in the first place, and it has never stopped. And every time another one of these cases come, we go, here we go again. We're all so, as Fannie Lou Hamer, sick and tired of being sick and tired, but we have to seize the spirit of Ida B. Wells, and we have to bring justice to bear. And that's only through our organizing, through our putting pressure, to our saying with our actions that our lives matter to us, and we're going to stand up for justice despite all the odds, and despite that this society demonstrates through action and deed that they don't care in many respects for Black people, or we're not given access to the same amount of justice. And so not being safe in your home, all of those examples you gave while Black, and all of the examples we've seen on social media, call after call of Black people being stopped or harassed or having a police call on them for doing routine, everyday things, just again bespeaks to that spirit of white supremacy that has never ended in this country. And that in the context of this current political context, has been given a license to continue and has been strengthened. And so for many Black people, this moment just reinforces what we've known all along. And what these cases represent are just the tip of the iceberg. These are the ones, these are not the only cases. These are the ones that really are representative of the many that do not gain national attention. The many over and over, and we have a whole litany of those, as one person said, the Mount Rushmore of injustices, Tamir Rice, Trayvon Martin, over and over. We got the whole roll call, Sandra Bland, the whole roll call exists, but they are just representative cases of all of the cases of injustice that this system continues to perpetrate. So we really have to focus on structural changes because the system is condoning this by sending out the signal that you could do it and get away with it.
Well,
that will stop when they no longer get away with it.
Well, that's the issue. You just hit the nail on the head. I asked Ben Crump this question, and I'll ask you about this. This is the Ahmaud Arbery case. It is not lost on a great many people that this is so similar to the Trayvon Martin case. I mean, the very few differences is that one happened at night, one happened in the day. Trayvon Martin was a teenager. Ahmaud Arbery was an adult. Trayvon Martin was accosted by one person. Ahmaud Arbery was accosted by two, and maybe based on today's arrest, three. But it is the same kind of situation. Trayvon Martin, armed with Skittles and a hoodie, and Ahmaud Arbery, armed with minding his own business and jogging shoes. Are you hopeful that the outcome in the Arbery case will be different compared to the Trayvon Martin case?
I would say that that the challenge for us, I do see the connection is very real. And even though the McMichaels and Roddy are civilians, so they weren't acting under the color of law, even though he has former law enforcement background, he was not acting in the capacity of law enforcement. His close ties with law enforcement and the fact that this was swept under the rug, the fact that we're on a fourth prosecutor, the fact that those who played a role in covering up or have close ties with them, and then what we do see, too, the law firm that he has a very high-powered law firm behind him that requires, that means somebody with deep pockets, because this is not an ordinary public defender. This is a very prestigious law firm. So somebody with deep pockets are funding their defense. I'm cautiously optimistic that bringing the sunlight and the fact that, we have that video and we have a lot of national attention can begin to bring a measure of justice, but it is going to be an uphill battle.
Mm-hmm. Ben Crump mentioned Joyette Holmes. He specifically mentioned that she was a Republican. She's also a black woman. Do politics matter in this case, in the prosecution of this case?
This is a high-profile political case. In the context of a high-profile political year, I think what we see is that play out in social media and other places, that for many this is a proxy war, and that I'm hoping that, like Crump alluded to, that she will do her job and be committed to justice and truth, regardless of what political label she goes under. But that's all we can hold her accountable to, that she's supposed to be a representative of the people and a representative of justice. And so politics plays a role in who they select. And your skin doesn't tell you your allegiance all the time. So we got Supreme Court justices that have our skin color but don't have our community interests at heart. So we can only look at what her record is and hope that she will be true to her oath to do justice and not put politics above doing justice.
Final question for you. Similar question as it relates to the Breonna Taylor case involving police. And, Kenneth Walker, her boyfriend, says he was shooting in self-defense. How do you think this will play out?
That case should be dropped immediately because in the context of the circumstances of him trying to defend himself, and we have to look at it from his perspective, and the system is looking at it from the perspective of the police. But when you're not aware of who's coming in, and clearly he acted reasonably because he only shot one shot. And the officer who was grazed is not even grievously injured. And so this is a disproportionate response. And so I would just say overall, Black people, more so than living in fear in this context, are expressing righteous outrage and heightened anxiety. It's a shame that so many Black people were even expressing concern about wearing masks, Black men wearing masks in public, which is what public health officials say we need to do to keep each other safe. And we're hearing all this rhetoric about we're in this together in terms of this larger pandemic. We're only going to survive this pandemic if we're here for each other. That needs to be applied to justice. For Black people, that this country owes Black people justice, and now is the time for them to begin to give us the justice that we deserve. So they should drop those charges immediately.
I think this is a place to end this conversation. Dr. Valethia Watkins, I want to thank you so much for talking to us, and as always, please stay safe.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum for this Thursday, May 21st. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Be safe. Good night.